wow, Sean, this motorcycle's awesome.
Yeah, I know, man. I've been working on this thing for a whole year. I just found the part I needed to take it for a spin. You want to go?
Yo, this is awesome. Woohoo!
Dude, you need to sit down. You need to relax. Sit down, grab my waist, and chill out. Enough of this standing up stuff, man. What do you think, you're in Titanic?
But I feel like I'm the king of the world.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Throwback Reviews Podcast. This is episode 6. Tonight we're doing My Bodyguard from 1980. My name is Sean, and with me is my friends, Steve McLaughlin, the Door-to-Door Geek. What's up, Door?
Hey, hey, yo. Same stuff. Just finding more different ways to consume content right now. I'm addicted to Plex, P-L-E-X, to watch my movies.
Your reviews movies?
Yeah, and this one you told me was on YouTube. Yep. There's now a way in Plex I can email a specific email address, put the YouTube link in there. So now the movie is in my library. I don't have to go searching around for it, hunting and pecking. And it does remember my placement. So if I stop watching it, come back, it starts at the exact same spot.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Plex is definitely cool that way. And like you said, you can watch it on your TV. You don't have to go through a YouTube app or anything. Just send it right there, and that's great. Yep. Very useful. Hopefully more of these movies we can find that way.
Oh, yeah.
So, also with us is Steve Cherubino. What's up, Steve?
I'm doing good. I'm doing really good. It's my birthday today. And
happy birthday, buddy.
Thanks, man. And my brother took me out to see Oblivion today. We just got back. It was an interesting movie.
Well, we can talk about that in about 20 years.
That's all I was going to say. Yeah, right.
Yeah, that'll be episode 1000. Then we'll do that one. Well, that's cool, man. You didn't even mention it was your birthday until now.
Nope. Yeah, I don't like to brag about it.
You want
to
be a little, yeah. So just for you to say it on the show. Yeah. No, I'm just
kidding. Well, happy birthday, Steve, and happy unbirthday, Sean.
Yes, and we would sing to you, but we don't want to get sued.
I've never heard Sean sing anything, even though I've tried to get him in other shows, so that's why. Nothing about, it's not about the law, Sean. It's about you just not wanting to sing.
I will sing sometime.
All right.
I will sing the intro at one point, but I can't tell, you know, you'll play the episode and it'll come on.
Okay. That sounds good.
Yeah. All you got to do is promise me bacon and I'll do just about anything.
Yeah. We don't want, though, we've heard you sing.
I know. Not pretty. We don't want you to sing. Not pretty.
We'll pay bacon to not sing on the show. We're trying to increase our listeners, not decrease our listeners. So, but yeah, this week we watched My Bodyguard, 1980 movie. It's a great movie. I told you guys before the show, I've been telling Steve this for the past week, that I have been trying to get my wife to watch this movie with me for a long time. We've been married 16 years. And every time I would bring it up throughout the years, it's not something I bring up all the time. She'd always be like, no, I haven't seen it for the how many time that you've asked me in our marriage. I've not seen it. So I got her to watch it again. Or I got her to watch it the other night. And then after she started watching, she's like, you know what? I have seen this movie. You made me watch this probably like 10 years ago or something. She's like, yeah, I remember it. So she made it through the movie. She's not here, but she didn't like it. She didn't really like the movie.
How do you know? What did she say about it?
She told me it was, I'll post a picture, hopefully, in on the website if I have her permission, of a little note. When I was taking notes watching the movie, she stole the notepad from me and wrote me a little note of how she felt about this movie, all summed up in like two sentences. So there's some choice words, so I can't really say them on the podcast because we have a clean We're a clean podcast, so we don't want to offend anybody or iTunes.
I did read it because you showed it to us before the show, and it was concise and it was a summary. I'll give her that.
Yeah, very concise.
Yeah, but she did have some good comments watching it, or pointed out some interesting things that I didn't even really pay attention to. So when we get to those, I'll give her credit for those things. But anyways, let's get into this movie. We're going to start off first. We get introduced to one of the main characters. His name is Cliff, and
Clifford.
The name Clifford, yeah, Clifford Peach. And so we get introduced to him, his father, and his grandma. I love the opening of this movie. You know, he's riding his bike, and let me ask you, what city do you think this is? Because I don't remember them ever saying a city, and I tried looking at license plates.
Chicago. It was definitely Chicago.
Chicago?
I'm almost willing to put money on it. When they were in the junkyard, I believe, is when you could see a plate.
Oh, okay. Because, yeah, I looked. I was thinking, at first I was thinking New York.
Right, same here.
And then there's a comment made in the movie that would kind of say it's not New York. Something, okay, maybe this is Jersey.
Right.
You know, but...
It didn't look like Jersey.
No.
Not to me.
See, I'm only familiar with South Jersey, like the shore, or like Bridgeton, I think is more South Jersey. I'm not used to like Newark or anything like
all right,
that.
Me too.
But yeah, so we see Clifford riding his awesome 10-speed bike.
Which went on way too long.
I didn't mind it. I really didn't. I didn't mind this part.
Yeah, I'll say what I didn't, the music immediately threw me for a loop. Because it was
music.
Well, because it was non-descriptive, very general music. It wasn't like it was a song adapted. Well, I don't think it was a song adapted to a movie. It was literally, I think, a score made for this movie, and I don't really pick up on them too often.
I think most movies back then were scores. That's the interesting thing about movies back then to me. I'm finding in doing all these rewatchings is it's an orchestra. Like they hire an orchestra to play this stuff.
Gotcha.
It's crazy.
Which I prefer, and that's going to bring me to actually a little earlier, but since we're talking about it, my wife pointed out a little later in the film about the music, but she's like, man, the music is awful, and I totally disagree. I love this music. I loved it, man. The violin, I was eating this up.
Really?
But I like listening to movie music, I guess you'd say, like, you know. Not just Star Wars. We had like John Williams and...
I didn't like it. You know, I wouldn't say that I liked it, Sean, but from personally, but I'm used to it. It reminds me of 80s movies when I hear this music. That's the kind of thing reminds me of. So I kind of just accept it, and I'm kind of feel a little, you know, warm and fuzzy when I hear it, but I would never go like listen to the soundtrack of it.
Mm-hmm.
I can honestly say if I could get my hands on it, I probably would. I liked it.
I'll do a remix version of it.
I would throw it in my playlist of, you know, movie soundtracks or something like that. But I did like the music. I thought that it fit better later on in the movie. When they played this music again, I think it fit a little bit better. So
I will say this music fit this movie. Yes.
okay. So Clifford ends up at the Ambassador East Hotel. Which we find out that's where he's living with his father and his grandma. His father is, I think that he's like the manager, isn't he?
Yes.
Of the place. Yeah. So he's the manager there.
Played by Martin Mull, who I really like as an actor.
Yeah, me too.
Yes.
He kicks ass.
Yes, I do too. Yeah. And you know what? We're not going to go over every single actor that was in this, but there was a lot of familiar faces.
Hell of
a
lot.
A lot. So, like you said, his father is the manager. His grandma lives with him, and she's like, I have my notes. She's a free spirit, totally free spirit. Just, she's always hitting on guy patrons at the bar within the hotel, and which is kind of causing a little tension, I guess you would say, at the hotel, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as soon as I saw her, I remembered her from Rosemary's Baby.
Really? I never saw that.
Oh, messed up movie. That's all I got to say.
I really liked her. I thought her character was very entertaining to me. The things that she was saying, how the way she was thinking and acting was pretty.
Oh yeah,
pretty
she
fun.
Was. I liked her character.
Yeah. Yeah. These days
she was in Harold and Maude as well. I believe.
Yeah, she is. These days we would call that senile or Alzheimer's, and she would be in a home. I'm just saying. I loved her, and personally, if she was my grandmother, I would know. I would have had a blast.
Yeah,
because she was free spirited, kind hearted. We'll get to a later thing she did, but she was definitely cool, a cool grand.
Yeah, yeah. And I also put my notes, and it's a former actress. I don't know. She kind of talks about something later on about not living there. Maybe they live at the old actor's home or something like that. Yeah. So, and just the way she acts, you know, she's very
flamboyant,
dramatic. But she's really cool. So we kind of meet his family, and I also like at one point in the beginning where he's talking to his father in his office.
Say
and
it.
What's he pick up?
Say it.
An X-wing.
Dang right.
An X-wing right off the desk.
I love
from
that.
His father.
I picked up on that too.
Yeah.
I said, so the dad's cool.
Yeah, the dad was definitely cool. I mean, he could have lost his cool in so many situations, but he didn't.
Yeah, his dad was kind of, he was cool, but clueless, I guess, a little bit to everything that was going on.
Well, he was very busy. Really? He was a very busy man. He had a very hard time balancing family and work, and he had to do a lot of work, which left Cliff to do what he wanted to do.
Yeah. Oh, the other thing I wanted to point out is you kind of find out that Clifford's, and this really plays no part in the movie, but I don't know, it stuck out to me. He's kind of a perv. I mean, he's not even a perv. Yeah. He's because I think he's supposed to be like 14 or 15 years old.
15.
So he's definitely, you know, coming into his.
You don't remember that scene?
No.
He has the telescope. Martin Mull comes over, looks at his telescope. Whoa! And then the kid tries to look. He said, no, you can't look. You're only 14. He said, I'm 15. Martin Mull stopped.
Yeah.
Said, you're 15? You are, and then go ahead and look. You're 15.
Well, if he's a perv, he learned it from his dad because they were both in on that little deal.
Ding.
Yeah, but he even checked, like in the beginning of the movie when he comes into the hotel and he checks out the girl working at the hotel right away as he walks by her, he's checking her out. So, but that is perfect for his age. You know, he's raging or whatever at this point. You know, he's at that age.
Yes.
But we meet him and his family, and I believe his mother has passed away, so it's just the three of them. So now we start off, we're going to go to school, the first day of school. They've just moved there as well from somewhere else. I'm not exactly sure where they moved from, but I believe it was more of a nicer school, I guess you would say. So this one's a little rougher. And the first day of school, I also noted that he brings on the path of this entire movie himself.
Yeah.
He's the new kid, and he's a smartass.
Well,
you know,
it was the first day, and I think he was just trying to be cool. He was trying to make someone laugh. I guess if you make people laugh, you make friends. I don't know.
I actually respect him a little bit. He didn't want to take any crap from Moody.
Right. Oh, well, so in homeroom, that's when we meet Matt Dillon's character,
sorry about
Moody.
That. I jumped the gun.
No, that's all right. Moody he's like the tough guy of the school or whatever, kind of bully.
He didn't look that tough, though.
Well, he's supposed to be the bully of the school, him and his little gang.
Yeah.
You know, Henchman. His little minions. Yeah. And, you know, in the beginning of the homeroom, you know, Matt Dillon, or Moody is saying something to a girl and she cracks a joke about Kmart or something. And this is where it all starts from is, you know, Clifford just kind of laughs and says Kmart, and then boom, he made the bully look dumber than what he is in front of everybody.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. Like I can understand, okay, it's his first day and he's more of an outgoing kind of kid, I guess, but you don't make everyone laugh at the expense of what you can tell is this kid who thinks he's the...
Well, I don't think, in his defense, I'll say, I don't think he could tell that Moody was, like, the butt kicker of the entire school, because he didn't look like the butt kicker of the school. You know, to me, he looked like the greasy guy. You know?
Yeah, I think Dor's right. Like, he was a big deal, because they made a whole production when he walked in the course room.
Right.
But, I don't think he really understood what he was getting into.
Right. And the other part about this scene that I really like was when the kid sitting next to him is telling him to feel under the desk, and he's telling him about
he's telling him
about the boogers, and he tells him that you got to, you know, be careful of the fresh ones. You can get hepatitis. I'm just like, why would you tell the kid to feel under there anyways?
I know. That's what I started thinking.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this kid I liked because he genuinely looked like a dork in school, and they didn't go out and try to find the best looking kid they could for this movie. They just picked a quote unquote kid.
Right. And I think, and this is the other thing my wife had pointed out to me, was everybody, you know, kind of was just normal.
Yes.
Like it looked like you're on a normal, like nowadays in this kind of movie, it's like going to be like the WB. You know what I mean? Where everyone in school is, for one, you know, 28,
thank
playing
you.
16.
Exactly.
And they're supermodels.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So that was another thing that she, you know, she pointed out that I think she kind of liked that aspect of it, that these people look like you're actually in a classroom.
Right. And even Joan Cusack, who I don't know, I don't think she was the name back then because she was too young, but she looked the part. I mean, most of the students looked the part. We're like, you said, you know, they're not 24 pretending to be 10-year-olds or 14-year-olds, you know.
And I didn't even know that was her. I knew she was familiar. I couldn't tell what from.
As soon as she opened her mouth, I knew.
That's awesome. Why did you put Eek in the email next, or the notes next to Joan Cusack?
Because she just looked, ooh.
Yeah, she did.
She was very white.
I mean, she's not
attractive.
I don't know. She's not the most attractive of the Cusack family, I guess. But even in here, she definitely stood out. But that was kind of just being silly in the notes.
How does she compare to Burt Reynolds?
Oh, she doesn't, man.
Okay,
she doesn't. You can't compare to that stash. But I believe Moody kind of tells him. You know, what does he say?
We're going to meet up after school.
You and me are going to have a talk after school.
Yeah. So I think at this point, he definitely knows he kind of messed, you know, did something to the wrong guy. But
didn't get too worried about it until he started asking, until they started talking about, well, okay, you could get into it. But he didn't realize it until we started talking to his friend about how Moody is like top gun in that school.
Right. And I don't know, do they talk about Linderman at all at this point? I know she calls him, but he doesn't show up.
She calls her name, and I think the kid does mumble to Cliff about he's psychopath or something.
Yeah. But then as the day goes on, Clifford is coming down the stairs or whatever, and he sees Moody with his little gang of henchmen, and he ends up, I love it, because he goes and hides in the library till he knows his car ride's coming to pick him up. Which, who is this guy? Who is the guy at the hotel that...
Doorman.
The doorman just...
He's apparently...
him around everywhere?
He's apparently the guy's chauffeur when he needs it because the dad's too busy.
Yeah. So he hides up in the library and he hears... I think he honks a horn or whatever. And that's when he's going to get picked up. And I don't know if Moody's guys were just waiting there for him purposely. Because I'm thinking, why would these guys be hanging out at school?
Yeah.
Because the janitor tells Clifford like 15 minutes till we lock up.
Right.
Or something.
What are they still doing around? They had to be waiting for Cliff.
Because they're not model students.
Come on, yeah, hip kids like this, bad guys, they would be out doing bad stuff, not hanging around school. And I'll say real quick, when they were running through the halls, this school to me looked a lot like the school from, Morgan Freeman, principal.
Oh, is it
Lean on Me? This school, I swear, has been in other movies before because the archways, the doorways, the stairwells, to me, just look so familiar.
Huh. Yeah, very well could be. I don't know, though. We'd have to do some digging on that door.
Okay.
But they take him into the bathrooms where Moody, I think he had another kid in there, didn't he, at some point when he walked in there? But Moody basically tells him in the bathroom, like, look, we're bodyguards. You're going to pay us to protect you from us. And, you know, this is where he tells him he wants, you know, he's got to give him a buck a day.
Back then, that was like saying almost $5 a day.
Yeah. And I, that's when they're rolling up the toilet paper in the sink.
Yep.
You know, and they're just whipping them at the ceiling. Yep. And I can remember that. Yep. I mean, you guys got to remember, even in lunchrooms and stuff like that, you'd always see stuff like that stuck on the ceilings.
Man, yep. I remember that. I remember, I didn't go to the bathrooms in my high school.
Ding.
This high school reminded me of that. I mean, there were people like Moody in the bathrooms in my high school, too. I didn't go in there, so I was totally relating when his friend was telling him, just hold it in, don't go to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And they were, like, whipping toilet paper around. Like, I was, like, in there, man. I feel that. I felt that for Clifford.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, seriously. High school, I went across the street to the Roy Rogers fast food restaurant. Junior high school, I would sometimes leave the school to go to the bathroom. Elementary school, I literally walked into the principal's office, waved hi to him, and went into his bathroom. Because, you know, getting the crappy out of you can only take so much of it. I'll just say
yeah. I don't remember too much about junior high and elementary, but I remember high school.
Yeah.
Junior high, I didn't go to the bathrooms in anywhere. You're right. I was the same way.
Yeah.
No, I was just, I mean, it wasn't as bad as this, but yeah, I didn't, going there, because most of the time it was like guys smoking.
That's what it was mainly.
You know, yeah. At the time I didn't smoke until like senior year, I think.
My school, smoking was the lightest thing they were doing in the bathroom.
Oh, I'm sure they were doing more, but like Steve, I didn't really go in there. But I also would ditch out of school a lot and end up other places. Yeah.
Go fishing. I would always go fishing. Me and my friend would play hacky sack and go fishing.
Hacky sack was fun.
Oh, yeah. I was really good at that, by the way.
Were you?
Oh, dude, I was the master. I could do moves that you would blow you away.
I had an official hacky sack, and I sucked at it.
Yeah, I think I used it
more as like a stress reliever or something in my hand than to play. I was like, I'm not kicking this thing around.
Okay.
But
yeah, they like drug him into the bathroom, and the whole time I'm thinking, walk out, walk out, walk out. Just walk out.
Yeah, but he couldn't walk out. They literally took him in the bathroom by his arms. They drug him in there.
I know.
There was no getting out, but, you know, yeah, and they're throwing all the stuff at him. So he, you know, he's not going to pay him his dollar. And again, like you said, Steve, like, that's awesome. Like, he didn't cave in. Like, all the other kids were like, all right, we'll pay you or whatever. And so he doesn't want to pay him, so he's going to make him drink that cup.
Yeah, baby.
Of toilet water. And I was just like, you gotta be.
There had to be something in it because he said, eat this.
Yeah, he did. He did say,
thankfully, they didn't show it.
Thankfully.
Yeah. But, and he thought quick, man, he ended up, you know, when he throws it in Moody's face and just splits out of there, running to his chauffeur.
Yeah, he got away. But I mean, the main thing that they were protecting him from was, what are we going to bring him up now? Linderman. That was their reason for protecting. That's who they say, and they were being bodyguards from.
Yeah, Linderman, who we haven't even seen yet.
We haven't seen, but we heard like stories from his friend in the homeroom there. And do you want to like introduce him to us, Sean?
Yeah, well, Linderman is the guy that the school talks about as being, you know, there's all bunch of different stories.
Right.
The main thing that he killed a kid, that he shot a kid.
Right.
I think they say he shot a policeman at one point and, you know, beat up a teacher. So there's like,
raped a teacher.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, how in school, these things just snowball, just get bigger and bigger and bigger. So yeah, they're going to protect him from, Linderman. But he still wants no part of it. And he doesn't really, you know, he doesn't know who Linderman is.
Right. Who the hell is Linderman?
He's just,
why should I care about him?
Exactly.
Yeah, he's just heard about it. So he gets out of there, and he really had no choice.
Well, and I'll tell you, if I was the driver and the kid I'm supposed to pick up jumps in the car and three kids run up to the window harassing him, I know something is wrong. You know what I mean? And obviously they didn't show up, but he knew it too because he had to tell the dad.
Yeah. And we end up now we're at the hotel and, it was like a little side part, but it wasn't.
I have to ask Steve, did they do one of the fake chase length, distance, shrinking, and growing things?
You know, I was thinking about that yesterday when I started doing the rewatch, and I just missed it. I was eating my pizza.
See,
I don't think I
that's a good movie, because they did. They actually did it twice.
They did it twice?
They,
you
they
watched?
Did it twice, yeah. I was paying very close attention. I was waiting to see if you would notice it. They did it twice.
It was a good chase scene,
well,
I have to admit.
One time it wasn't bad, because they used angles to make it look like they could be far away, but you could tell they were literally like feet. But the second time, when they turned the corner, you could tell the distance.
Really? I didn't think it was as bad as Cloak and Dagger, but I didn't pay too much attention.
No,
so
that
good,
was
good
gigantic. That went from like 3 feet to 45 feet.
Okay.
But they did do it. They did it just a little bit.
Yeah,
good eye,
really,
man.
I didn't notice it myself. I was just like, run, run. Don't let them get you. But so we end up back at the Ambassador. And a little side plot to the movie that's going on. It's not a big major thing, but there's a guy named Griffith that works at the hotel, and he's like the assistant manager. Right. But it's very clear he wants his dad's job, you know. So they kind of show him he's calling Mr. Dobbs,
corporate.
who's like corporate leader, you know, head of the Ambassador, and probably more other, because it's the Ambassador's like a nice hotel.
Yeah.
Excuse me. But, they're on the balcony at this point, and the driver did tell his dad, because his dad ends up telling him that he, you know, oh, he had some trouble at school, and he told me called,
yeah.
and you just, you're like, why? Just made it 100 times worse. You don't do that.
No.
You don't do, especially at that age.
Yeah.
But, you know, you do have to do that.
Well,
you know what I mean? As a parent,
I can understand as a parent calling up the school and just saying, look, I heard something went down. I just want you guys to be aware of it. I wouldn't, please don't pull them in the office and say something. And I think the dad genuinely complained and said something like, oh, my son's being treated unfair. He's being harassed by other students, kind of thing.
Well, he probably should have talked to his son about it before.
Yeah.
You know, maybe talk to his son and find out what's going on,
right.
whatever. But, for the movie's sake, he had to do it, and it adds to the rift between Moody and Clifford. But this is the scene also that we talked about earlier with the microscope, because they're, you know, if
telescope.
Doors right, or even so, the telescope. Yeah, they're in the big city, and he's got them scoped out of like what women, where he can look at these.
And it's so fake. He like just wings it over like at a. Like, it doesn't even, like line it all up or size it all up, and it goes right, you're looking right into the window.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It was pretty fake. But, yeah, I mean, the whole idea that he's just, like, peeping Tomming.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. Just to give you that idea, yeah. And the father is, you know, he's fighting him over, and he ends up winning. He says he's older, and he needs it more than he does.
Gotta give him some credit for that.
So, yeah, that was a nice setup for the next day at school. Which when you do get to the next day of school, I mean, it starts off and you got Clifford and Moody in front of the principal, you know, lecturing them.
Yeah.
I think Moody ends up getting like 3 days detention or something like that, after school detention or something like that.
Yeah, it was at least three. I want to say maybe five.
Yeah.
And this is when Moody starts, he realizes that Clifford is a problem.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, people don't give me trouble around here. He's like, and I can't remember what he said, but he's like, you do or something.
You better have eyes in the back of your head, because you ain't going to see it coming.
Yeah.
Which I can tell you right now. I leave the principal's office, no one else in the hall. They go, they walk, they make a couple turns. I would have just turned to Needham. I would have had to, because I know I'm going to get mine, might as well give his. Because that was an obvious threat. So obvious threat. And I'll say, I could almost see, like, a douchey mustache on Matt Damon, because the way he talked, he was
Matt Dillon,
because he was that, like, slimy slime ball.
Exactly. Douchey mustache.
Oh, he definitely had one coming in. I mean, I think this might have been his second movie. I'm not positive, but I know I mentioned a movie to you guys last week, Over the Edge. It was from 1979. Another really cool movie. And he's, again, you know, he's the same type of
really?
Just troublemaker, kind of person in that movie. So,
third movie.
It's his third movie? All right. But I think he plays that part this part.
Well, I'll say I think it was very natural for him. I'll just say that.
Yeah. But you know what else I liked about it? The only thing I want to talk about with the principal, I love how he tells Clifford, you know, this is a little different school, and just tells him, like, look, you can't be crying wolf over everything.
Right.
You know, like, he took care of the problem. He understands that. I think everybody in the school knows Moody's a jerk.
Yeah.
But, you know, I like that. And yeah. He's just like, basically, buck up, kid.
Exactly. I know. I like that, too.
First day of school, and you got daddy calling. But, so that this must have been prior to even homeroom, or depending on how they do it, if they had a class first. But
yeah.
In homeroom, Linderman actually ends up coming into homeroom a couple minutes late. This is when you find out, or you see who it is, and it's Adam Baldwin, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, we kept saying
not
Al
a Baldwin,
Baldwin
brother.
Right,
not a Baldwin brother. But if anybody who's seen Chuck,
he
was on Chuck. I forget his character's name.
He's been in more than that. I'll say that because
he's been in a ton of
right,
stuff.
But
Firefly,
right? But as soon as he walked in, the thing I liked was he literally looked like he was probably a year or more older, and he was a flunky because he had like a little bit of a sideburns, dirty, scruffy. Just
but
look,
what caught me eye attention was he was humongous.
Yeah.
He was
compared
so tall.
Everybody.
He was at
compared
least
to everybody.
Yeah, he was at least a foot taller than seemingly everybody.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you could tell, but just looking at, he was a troubled kid. You know, he wasn't there. He wasn't all there. He was just kind of going through the motions. And you instantly, at least I did, you feel bad for the guy. Even though he's bigger, everyone's kind of whispering as he comes in. Oh, that's a guy. You know.
Right.
I don't know. I felt for him. You know, definitely looked a little dirty and stuff like that. But like I said, as you find through the movie, man, he's just checked out kind of in a way.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah, that's when we find the story out. Yes, I would too.
Yeah, so... So he's at class. What was after this? I messed up.
This
Jim
was the most upsetting scene in the movie for me. But go ahead, John.
No, you go ahead.
Basically, they're at gym, and skins versus shirts in basketball. I mean, he knows Moody wants him. Moody delivers an elbow, catching the basketball rebound, knocks him on the ground. He, like a little girl, lays on the floor like he should. And then, whatever, you know, you better play with the big boys. And then they get up, and he goes into the gym to get cleaned up. And I'll just say, I've been put inside of a locker. Okay? I'll just say that. He shoves him inside the locker, and he's sitting there. That didn't happen this scene?
No, you're jumping.
I'm jumping.
This is when he goes in, his clothes are
hot.
He opens his
trash.
He opens his locker and just banana peels. It just garbage.
You
can
almost smell the banana peels
through
the screen. It was nasty.
You're right. I completely jumped like 2 days in school.
but that part was again, I mean, you're like, come on, man.
Well, did he get the elbow that day?
Yeah, he did. Okay. Yeah, he took an elbow, and then they cut to the locker room where all his crap is all over his clothes.
Well, I learned at a very young age, don't play basketball with someone you do not like, because those bows do a come a flying.
Yeah, but I mean, this is, I remember seeing this stuff in school. You know, there's always, because when I moved from one town to another town, just like him, but I was in like eighth grade, and it sucked.
Well, yeah.
It sucked being the new kid.
Really?
Sucked.
Well, here's the thing.
Yes.
One kid is almost always going to get beat up. Your goal as that kid is to turn the attention to another kid. Okay? If I was that little dorky kid who pointed out the hepatitis in the room, first thing I would have did was shove Clifford down to show my dominance to him, to Moody. See, Moody? Here you go. You can beat up this guy right here.
Well, your survivor skills are kicking in, Dor. That might not be a bad idea.
Well, yeah, I've been through a lot. I understand that.
Well, luckily, I didn't have to deal with anything like this.
Were you
Moody? I definitely was. I a Moody? No, I was the new guy. You know, I had some people come up to me at a locker, but you know, nothing ever. I just didn't have a lot of friends until the end of the year. Let's just say.
Gotcha.
I would go back to my old town on the weekends, which my parents didn't understand. Why? You know, we moved.
How could you not understand?
I hate it, Ma. I didn't like it. So yeah, I felt horrible for him at this point. And I'm going to, this is why I'll even share a story about it. Cause this is what his, I think we're saying it's like his second day,
yeah.
right? This is the second day at school. So now he's in his dirty gym clothes. That's what he's got to wear. Right.
Yeah.
And I think it was my second day of school and we had swim and my towel ended up falling on the floor
nice.
In a thing of water. So I basically had to dry off with a wet, soaking wet towel. Second day of school. Don't know anybody. Nobody likes you. So when I'm seeing this, I'm like, man, I feel bad for the dude. That sucked.
See, but, me, I would have said, fine. I'll just walk out the front door of school, go home, get clothes.
Did you live close to your school?
I was literally in the middle of a triangle. My elementary school, junior high school, and high school were all within walking distance. They were all at the most 10 to 15 minutes away from my
house.
That's
good. Yeah, I couldn't walk home, dude. It sucked.
Yeah, I couldn't either at this point. I was pretty far away. Actually, we were still living in the next town over. My mother would drive us in the morning to the following town.
Yeah, see, that was the only good thing about Glen Burnie. Except for that, it was a pigsty, a cesspool. Glen Burnout was what it was called by the other areas because there was a lot of, let's say, headbangers around and a lot of extracurricular activity going along.
Yeah. Like chess club?
Like chess club.
If I was Clifford, I wouldn't even have watched those clips. I threw them in my bag. Waited till school was over and then got out of there. He's like in the sink trying to wash them all off. Just wear your gym clothes for the rest of the day and go home and cry and do whatever you got to do at home.
Well, I'll say, and this is kind of bringing up one of my issues with this movie. He's not sissy enough or dorky enough. Because I thought in the beginning of the movie, the point of this movie was to have a dorky, sissy kid getting pounded. Getting treated bad, he's a societal reject. And he just wasn't dorky enough. He wasn't sissy enough.
I thought the character was fine. I wasn't expecting that. I was just looking at the same point of me. It's like you're in the new dude in the school. You already got strike against you.
Well, see, that's my problem. You were looking at him like you. I was looking at him like me. And I was thinking he wasn't dorky enough.
All right.
I guess.
I guess I can't argue what you're thinking.
I guess. I don't know.
So if A equals B equals C, are you saying Sean is dorky?
No, I'm saying Sean wasn't dorky because he was looking for a kid, not dorky. He was seeing himself in it.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. we'll move on. Yeah, but like Steve said, yeah, when he washes clothes in the bathroom and he hears those guys coming in the bathroom, he hides in the stall.
Yeah, that's right.
That was a great scene.
And he peeks over and sees, and they know he's in there.
I love how they were just standing there. That was great.
Leaning against the wall. Like.
And honestly, I love the old school bathroom wooden stall doors. Like it was like the front of a tavern doors almost.
Front of a tavern.
You know, it was like wood, real wood.
Yeah,
it was. Yeah, and the only thing that gets him out of that situation is because you don't even know Linderman's in there having a smoke in the stall. Yeah. Comes out and kind of
now is
like,
he smoking weed or was that a cigarette?
Nah, I think he just had a cigarette and he just spooked the other guys out of there.
Oh yeah, as soon as he stood up, dude, Moody straightened right up.
Did you see Clifford take notice? I mean, he was like, okay, the gear started turning in his head immediately.
Yeah,
because he goes and follows him and asks him.
Yeah.
You know, he tells him the situation that he, you know, I don't know if you saw it in there or whatever, but he wants nothing to do with
it. Yeah,
I
mean,
Linderman wants, he says, I have quotes, I'm not interested.
Yeah, and I'll say that took guts for him to follow him. I don't know if I would have followed him.
Well, yeah, because even his, you know, his one friend, like in the middle of the gym, there's like four people playing like violins and cellos and stuff like that. And they're watching him, follow him. And he's just like, you know, because at this point, what does he got to lose? He knows
his head. He's a rapist killer. And he doesn't believe it. And he doesn't have the history of like living in that town and probably hearing 20 people say that Linderman's a killer.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, he didn't, if he had all that information and lived there, he probably wouldn't go chasing after Linderman.
Yeah. But like you said, he took note of the reaction that they had by him coming out. They don't want nothing. They didn't want to be around him. They want nothing to do with him. But yeah, he says no. So, excuse me. So then we'll jump down to the next day at school. They show Clifford in the lunchroom gets tripped over.
Yeah.
You know, everyone laughing or whatever. I think it was one of Moody's, you know,
goons.
Henchmen. Yeah. And Moody just kind of leans over, says something to him. They have a nice trip or some crap like
so
that.
So bad.
I was waiting for him to say, have a nice trip. See you next fall. I really thought he was going to say that.
And then in the rowboat, see, I kind of got messed up here. I thought this was at school, but then it kind of seems like we have a couple days of school and after school mixed up right here. The timelines, because he's in a rowboat with, I'm assuming, I think the kid's name is Carson. I was looking at IMDb. I couldn't figure it out by a picture.
That's right. They never really said, did they, in the movie?
Yeah. And this is, and who I'm talking about is the booger kid that warns him about the hepatitis.
And another unknown friend.
Yeah. They explain to him their ideas of what happened with Linderman. And it's the same thing. You know, he shot a kid, you know, what we said earlier, shot a cop, raped a teacher or whatever. And he doesn't want to believe it. Clifford doesn't want to believe it. He can see that to him, I think he's looking at him going, no, this is just made up.
Yeah.
You know, something's not right. He can tell something's not right. And, so that's what he says. I don't believe it.
I'll just say this boat thing actually might be a school thing because a couple of times they're at the park and there's water right next to them and the park looks like it might actually be a part of the school. Like the school seems to be right there.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So it might be a school thing because it looked like it was a bunch of kids. I mean, how many kids turn to other kids and say, hey, let's go out on a rowboat? I mean, you know.
Well, there's no one's going to pick on them in the middle of the water.
Yes,
they're safe.
But if Moody would come up in a rowboat, they'd have no chance.
Yeah, I never asked my friends to go hang out on a rowboat with me.
Right, and here's a guy who went fishing.
That's right.
He's halfway there.
So what? The next scene after this, I really didn't even think twice about it until I rewatched it yesterday. When the teacher, they cut to the, I believe it's Homer or whatever, and the teacher's reading a story.
Yeah.
And there's Linderman just kind of staring off in a dead gaze out the window. I think a couple of the girls kind of are looking at him. Like, I don't even know what that was she was reading, but listening to it was like kind of like making this connection to Linderman of basically being half dead already.
I want
to
say
just following him.
It was either Romeo or Juliet or Hamlet. It was one of those kind of things, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know, for some reason I thought, Steve, you would be the one with the answer of exactly what it was. And
no, I sucked at English. Hardcore as far as that goes. I hated we had to read those stories. So I don't know for that, but the way she was reading and the way the whole mood was set, I liked how they played out that scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so do you agree that it was kind of like
a connection there?
Connection between this guy here and, I don't know, it was, I didn't even really notice it the first time.
I didn't make the connection, but now I can see it, that it would be.
Okay. I think you did miss one scene. I can't remember. The scene when all the girls were on stage practicing cheerleading and Clifford went and talked to the teacher.
Yeah, it's right now.
Oh, good timing. There you go.
They were like such cheesy cheers. That made me laugh.
It was with a completely unnecessary crotch shot.
Yeah,
it's like a four second just sitting there looking at the girls from the waist down. It's like, yeah, I feel a little weird watching this. Jesus,
that was great.
I missed that shot then, I guess. I wasn't thinking that at all. It was, I mean, the scene was very quick until he started talking to the teacher.
Yeah.
To see if she could give him a real solid background on Linderman. He really wants to know, what's this guy's deal?
That was really smart, too.
Yeah, and yes, she tells him, you know, this is what I know, or this is what I've been told, I think, or what she knows.
What she knows. She was very careful not to spread rumors, like very careful.
She's like, yeah, because he says a couple things. She goes, like, I don't know about those things, but what I do know is there was an accident at home with his little brother. There was a gun involved. Right. He was watching his brother, and she tells him, you know, the gun went off on accident, killed the little brother, and Linderman was the only one there and found his brother.
Right.
She's like that, and that's all she knows. And you're right. She doesn't want to go and spread. She's like, all that other stuff. Not gonna say it happened. Not gonna say it didn't. I don't know. Right. So it was very smart of him to go right to the teacher. You know, someone a little more respectable to give him an answer.
Yeah, and this was the scene. This was a scene where I genuinely liked her casting, her job as a teacher. I thought she did good because you don't want to be, you don't, you know, back then you could, I think, talk freer. These days, the teacher would just say, you have to go talk to the counselor or something, you know, where at least then she was willing to talk to the kid, at least for a couple seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he gets that information from her. And this is when we get to the scene door where he was swimming. He comes out of the pool. He's going to the locker
right,
room.
Swimming.
Moody's in there with another one of his guys. And they already got it. They got a kid pinned down right there for not paying. Cause I overheard the kid saying, you know, he didn't pay because Clifford's not paying.
Right.
I think he says, you kind of hear that, which then Moody comes over. I didn't like this. This part bothered me. When Moody comes up behind him, puts a towel on his face and his head, and
he was like a cat with a yogurt cup on his face. He just immediately, stopped moving, and he was letting him walk him around. Dude, I mean, delivering bows or something.
I don't know.
A cat with a yogurt cup? What does that mean?
I don't know. But it was like as soon as he put the towel on his head, he just started put his hands up, like, Moody, stop, Moody, stop.
Yeah, no fighting back.
Right.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think that took him off guard. Look, man, I didn't partake with the way our lockers were set up. This is even before I moved. This is at my first school in junior high in seventh grade. The kid that was next to me, this kid got picked on all the time.
So he went to my school.
And I'm not going to lie, man. Like when I think back of it, even now, it makes me feel bad. Like that I didn't say anything or, you know, but at that time you don't because out of fear that something's going to, you know, even though I knew somewhat of the guys that would do stuff to him that weren't real buddies with him, but you just don't want to have any attention on you. But I used to feel horrible for this kid in school. You know, they would slam him into his locker. I mean, he was just a small kid. So, and I remember the way they would do to this kid. And it's not a matter of just going, okay. It's a matter of just going through the motions to get it done. You know what I mean? That's how I looked at this kid at school. So that's how I looked at this. I think it was just, couldn't really do anything, I guess.
Well, yeah. And a quick flashback, the first locker scene, I don't want to sound mean, but he didn't have a lock on his locker. I almost would expect if I'm that kid, someone to mess with my stuff because I don't have a lock on it. And he literally just walked up and opened it up.
He's 14.
So dad, I need a lock.
He's 14. You don't think about that.
The other kids
stuff.
Had locks.
We didn't have locks on our gym lockers every year. Some years you did, some years you didn't. I mean,
if I was him, I would have.
I don't know, but he ends up getting put in the locker.
Yeah, and this was just so pathetic. Help! Help! Someone, let me out! Help!
No,
he wasn't
screaming.
He wasn't even screaming.
No, he was throwing. Steve, are you going to help me out here?
I don't think it was like Dorset. I think Peachy had a little bit of a whiny voice.
Towards the end of when he's in the locker. At first he was kicking it and help. Then he started slowing down, I thought.
I just didn't think he was loud enough because I'm going to tell you something. I would have been like the hounds from hell bellowing because somebody would hear me. I've been locked inside lockers before. Sound radiates pretty good.
How'd you get out, Dor?
Quite literally, I was able to get one knee up and Hulk out. I busted the side from inside one locker to the other. And when in inside lockers, you can open them up as long as there's no lock on the handle. You can open them up.
Lift that.
I got cut all up too.
Ah, dude.
Well, I have to say, I've never experienced being stuffed in a locker.
Yeah, being very skinny and scrawny did have an advantage back then.
Yeah, what was that?
I could get my knee up inside of a locker.
I was skinny and scrawny too, man. Now I cannot get back to that state.
Now they wouldn't be able to fit me in a locker.
I would take up four.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So how does he get out, guys? How does he get out of this locker? Steve.
Well, he screams like mad. I can't imagine him screaming any louder than he did in that scene. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. So he's like yelling mildly. He gets some volume. And Linderman, I like the scene because Linderman, they showed the outside of the locker, and Linderman's the only person there left.
Yeah.
And Linderman's is like, I don't want to get involved with this. So he leaves the locker room, and then his conscience starts like hitting him, and he's like, you see him come back and open the locker for Peachy. I know his name's Peach, but I'm going to call him Peachy. So then Peachy just starts screaming at Linderman. Like, can't you see now? I got to do that. He went off on Linderman a little bit, which was pretty cool, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he figures now he's going to do something. And he says, go ahead, you big dumb son of a bitch.
Yeah.
And then once he says that, then Linderman kind of gets a smirk on his face. And from that point, you can tell they're kind of, all right, there's going to be some communication on here. He notices what's going on to this kid.
Right. Right. I heard big dumb son of a bitch, but I couldn't tell what Peach was saying before that to Linderman.
I think he said something like, go ahead, take your turn.
Yeah, it's your turn now. Go ahead. Do it.
Yeah.
Big son of a bitch.
Yeah, he figures he's going to do something at him, but he doesn't. And they obviously come to some sort of agreement. He's reconsidering Clifford's offer to him. Because we go the next day, and it's obviously after school, or maybe it's probably this day.
Wait, is this, didn't he like follow him all the way home in this scene?
No.
Okay, my bad.
It comes a little after. Okay. They cut to the diner. You know, obviously all these kids hang out at the same diner after school. You know, it's like the Peach Pit in 90210. But yeah, this is awesome. This is the scene I completely totally remember as a kid since I've watched this. It was when he starts squirting ketchup on their face, on all his buddies' face, and dumps, I think, a milkshake or something on Moody's face. And everyone in there is just like, what the heck? Even the diner operator, you know, Chip or whatever his name would be. I don't know. He's just like, what's going on out there?
That was a great scene. He was.
It
was almost like every kid's dream to do to their bullies is do what he just did there.
Dude, you know what this is? This is like the comedy version of Children of the Corn.
Oh, my goodness. That's a stretch.
When Isaac, in the beginning, when Isaac looks over the diner window in the beginning of Children of the Corn and gives the nod from outside, and then the chaos ensues.
I don't remember. Because
he does that. He kind of looks in the diner, I think, from outside, and then goes in and starts doing it. So.
I would say the only thing that caught my eye about this scene was he didn't run fast enough, which, in hindsight, I understand why he didn't. But me, I would have been full throttle out that door. Boom!
I agree with Door here. He was a little like, okay, where do I got to go now? Oh, over across the street. I'll wait for the car to go by. Yeah, I would have been like, bing, road runner out of there.
You guys are really stuck on how fast people run in these movies, aren't you?
Yeah, I guess so.
The chase scenes.
Adds to the realism, and it's not hard to do. You just turn to the actor and say, run. No, stop. Come back here. Run.
You know. Run like Davy in Cloak and Dagger. That's how what he should have said.
Oh, Davy was huffing.
Well, he gets across the street, almost getting hit by cars and stuff like that. And everyone, the whole school kids that are in there all foul behind like some little back alley type way. And this is when, Clifford says like, look, man, if you got anything to say, I think he says something like, if you got anything to say to me, you can say it to him as bodyguard. And that's when Linderman comes out. And it's funny because these guys are all covered in ketchup and mustard. Yeah. And Moody.
Every one of Moody's guys just,
Moody wanted to fight, though.
Yeah.
He did give him credit for that.
Yeah, he wanted to fight Linderman, but not by himself.
Right.
He wanted backup. And that's that thing, you got all these guys that they were dorks too. You know what I mean? Like these guys are all dorks, but it's because there's a group of them. So it's that group mentality of, okay, you're afraid of these guys because there's a group of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think the group of them is going to be up, but yeah, with Linderman, they're just all like, they want nothing. One by one, they just keep walking away. And he's begging them like, come on, man, we can take this guy. Come on.
Right. And even if Linderman's a killer, a murderer, a rapist, four of those kids, they could have took him.
Well,
they did.
They were afraid to. And then Clifford tells him like, look, no, we don't need your service. Nobody at the school needs your protection services anymore.
Yeah.
And the booger kid flips him off, tells him he owes him but it's lunch money or
yeah,
something.
Yeah.
That was funny. And then, you know, Clifford and him kind of have a talk after, and he thinks they have kind of like a bond, a little relationship or something
right.
going on, like a team. And Linderman's just like, look, man, it's done.
Well, yeah. And
there's no
just
team.
Real quick, right after that scene where all the kids and the kid gave him a finger, Linderman was almost walking through the crowd like a prize fighter when people were like tapping him on his shoulder. Good job. Good job. I was expecting Linderman to freak out. Like, don't touch me. Cause I had the impression he was a psycho. Blah, 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 blah. And that's when I realized right there, either really bad writing or he's not at all what their poor trying him to be. He's not this crazy psycho killer.
Huh. That's interesting, Dora, because this is the first time you saw this movie, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I couldn't even remember the first time I saw it. So every time I watched it after that, I knew Linderman was not a psycho. So you're watching it from like brand new eyes, and I could totally see how that would be for somebody who's watching it for the first time. Yeah. That's pretty cool. So that probably made the movie better for you.
It made me think, what's going on here?
Yeah.
You know, I thought he was a killer. I thought he was a killer. I thought he was a killer.
Right. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed that too. Like, everyone tapping him, and he just kind of just wanted to get out of there. Does he tell Moody, get out of here, Moody, or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
He kind of talks like that. So he's coming out of the shell a little bit. After this, my notes are, I was just looking ahead of my notes, a little screwed up. So I'm going to skip that. I kind of backtracked. But when we get to school, you want to say something?
Is this where he followed him all the way home, or he tried to?
Well, he goes. Yeah, he kind of does. The next day at school, he sits with them at lunch, and you know, Linderman's just like, because he's like, look, man, I thought we were friends. Now you do me a favor. I'll do you
yeah,
a favor.
Pass me the salt.
Do.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Reached on his tray. I thought he was going to punch him.
And Linderman just basically tells him, like, look, the show's over. You know, this is it. And he walks out of the lunchroom. And now after school, when his chauffeur picks him up, he has his chauffeur trailing him out of school until they get to a point where he goes down an alley. There's a truck and it's a one way. He can't go, and he just jumps out of the car.
And it's a bad neighborhood, man.
And I got to say, Linderman navigates these streets like a champ. He's like just, he flows through these streets. He's like cruising.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? It's like, it's not a nice area. The chauffeur even tells him, like, you want to come down here at nighttime, whatever. It's not a nice area, but the way he carries himself, Linderman.
Oh, he would have no problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't have a problem because he's not, you know, he's not drawing attention to himself.
Well, and he was bigger than most of the adults.
It's true.
Yeah. But he just has that way about him that he just fits in, you know.
And he dresses kind of slovenly.
Yeah, when he's going down the back alley, there's a bunch of guys asking for money and stuff. Like, it's not anything to him. Well, he just kind of goes. Now, Clifford, on the other hand.
They saw Clifford as like low-hanging
right.
fruit.
Hey, pretty boy.
Oh, yeah.
Give me a dollar.
Yeah. But this is the part where, as he's following him, that I thought the music fit perfect. I don't know. Just with what was going on and everything, you know, it was just. And I thought this scene was a lot longer, looking back at it now. But I guess not.
It was pretty long, I thought. I mean, I didn't have a problem with that.
It was a little long. I think they definitely wanted to show the scurv surrounded by a Linderman because it was disgustingly trashy. It was horrifically trashy. Literally like 2.5 feet of trash piled up in some of the back alleys.
Yeah. I liked this scene. I thought it was a lot longer. It was not super long, but he ends up finding that Linderman stops behind a little building. He knows he's being trailed by him. Obviously, at some point, he saw
him.
Oh,
I'll tell you when. When they were both down the back alley and when the bums were trying to get money from Clifford, he could hear them ask for money. Because as soon as he was walking, I said, I know he has to be able to hear them. And the very next scene was when he was hiding behind a corner and said, why are you following me?
I like the camera work in this scene.
Yeah,
you had some above shots. You see the little guy with their stands and everything. I know I like the way this part was shot.
Yeah, me
too. Scene, but he does. He stops him. He knows he's following him. Tells him to leave him and everything. He doesn't. And Clifford's just like, how do I get out of here? Again, we get a little bit of more humanity from Linderman, where he kind of smiles. It's like, come on, you know, come with me.
And to me, that was the utter confirmation. He was just a normal guy who went through some bad stuff. Because a real psychopath would have been like, and just left. You know,
or slaughtered Clifford in the back alley.
Or brought him down to a colder, darker, quieter place to kill him.
Yeah. Now, from what I remembered as a kid, he takes him to like a shop or something where he shows him his motorcycle. Linderman's rebuilding a motorcycle. I thought as a kid that like, this was a, like his house, like he lived above the garage or something, which you find out later in a movie. It's not. It's just a shop.
I thought the same thing,
where
though.
He hangs out.
I thought the same thing. He lived above it, disheveled teenager guy. That's what I thought.
Right. And he, you know, so he's opening up to Clifford and telling him about his motorcycle he's rebuilding, and but he needs like a cylinder or something. Mm-hmm. And then so then we cut to these two guys going like from junkyard to junkyard, looking at cylinders and motorcycle. You know, Clifford running around getting all dirty and bringing him up stuff, and he's, you know, that's not it. And eventually, Clifford ends up finding
Come on, we knew Clifford was going to find it.
Right, and he finds the right cylinder. And,
I didn't like that because like every cylinder he was showing Linderman, it was all kind of the same size, right? And then the one that actually fit was like twice as big as every other single one that he showed him. I'm like,
he's showing him these little ones, and Linderman would kind of look at it and study it. And yeah, you're right. And then he brings him one that's like three times the size of it, and he's looking at it, and then he just like the slow motion.
That was the classic 70s slow mo. We did it, kind of thing.
Yeah, that was funny though. Yeah. And it and we cut to these two just like tooling around on this motorcycle. We're going through the city,
almost Titanic like at points.
Yeah, standing up on the back of the bikes like they're the champs.
What do you think about
you know?
That?
That made me puke almost.
Why a little too cheesy for you?
Well, because obviously it was back in the day. Helmet laws weren't really real. Obviously, they were not really on a motorcycle. They were being towed on a trailer, not running a motorcycle. And when they were standing up on the back, Titanic-esque, I just thought, if I'm driving that motorcycle, I would have turned to him and said, sit down. Stop being such a puss and just sit down. Enjoy the ride.
Yeah, except they both do
it. I know, which just...
They were elated.
Reaffirms to me that he ain't no killer psycho fighter. He ain't even a fighter. That's what I thought.
Because I loved it. They would go under like a bridge and they'd come out and the other one would be driving. Then they go through a bridge and the other one back driving. They both did their stand up on the king of the world type thing. But they were really riding it. You could see like when they got chased off by security.
A couple times they were. But when it was the up close of them with the hair blowing through their hair, they weren't actually riding it. But honestly, I'll say this was this was one scene where I said, this scene is too long. I get it. You know, they might have well just had some bad music going. Wait, they did going on. Just happy, happy, giddy. Everything's fine. The planets are aligned, kind of thing. I got that's what they were trying to say. You know what I mean?
It did go on a little long too. I agree with Dory.
But I did like them getting chased off from the guard. That was good.
Yeah, and he's waving at him. Yeah, that was funny. But so we have a friendship now with these guys. It's more than just I'm going to pay you, do your homework.
A bonding.
They have a bonding. After this, I just want to touch on this real quick. I had this in the notes, but it's really not a big deal, this hotel scene. But what we do see is we talked about earlier with Griffith, I think his name is, trying to get his dad's job. He gets Mr. Dobbs to come in there. And takes him right to the grandma.
Oh, yeah, wouldn't you?
Because you know he's trying to discredit this family. And what ends up happening, Dobbs loves the grandma.
Wouldn't you?
They start dancing. Well, yeah, but he thinks he's going to, okay, this is going to get it, you know. So I really like this part. My dog does too, obviously.
Yeah.
But
I really liked how he basically fired him.
Yeah.
To me, that was just good.
Yeah, he fires his dad. Fires Griffiths. You know, get some rest after a long day of looking for work. So, I just want to tie that whole part together since I brought it up earlier.
Griffith was such a
douche.
Yeah. He was a douche. Yeah, just like a very dry, straight, like just boring.
Instead of trying to maybe work his way up the way you would want someone to move right. up in a position. He was trying to cut his throat to move
yeah.
up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's what sucked. It's like, all right, you know, show that you need to be that position. Cause you know, I mean, this place is a big hotel. Yeah. There could be a different position for him or even another hotel within the city. I'm exactly. sure owned by the same company. So he didn't want to work his way up. He just felt obviously they were kind of newer to this position. He probably was overlooked and felt he was entitled
yeah,
to that.
Probably. Yeah.
yeah. You I'll know. Say, Russ Winter would call this guy a touche, which he says is two douches.
I agree.
So we cut the next day. We're at the at the park.
There was still more that night because the old man Dobbs got tired. She told him, go up to your room, take a rest. I'll be up by 9. And then they had dinner. The Cliffy, the grandmother, and Linderman. To me, mm-hmm. this was a very important scene showing the grandmother's humanity.
Yeah, she tells him, you know, you're among friends.
Yeah, you're among friends. He obviously slit his wrist, tried to kill himself at some point in time. And she didn't even look at his wrist the second, at his hand the other time because she was reading off his palm. And she said, you have a very long life. That was the straightest you saw the grandmother of the entire movie. And you could tell she just wanted the boy to just relax. You're amongst friends. We're all nice people.
And you could tell in Linderman's face, like, he knew it that he actually thought she was reading like she was like a professional palm yes. reader or something. You could tell he's like really intent. And when she said that to him, he felt like some kind of relief, yeah. you know.
And that's a good grand. Yeah, I hope she got lucky that night with Dobbs.
I'm gonna say she did. I'm gonna say she did. And I don't even know the characters, the guy who played Dobbs, but he's another guy that you've seen
everywhere.
In,
yeah.
in just tons of movies. John Houseman. The one thing I can point out, he was the grandfather in Silver Spoons.
Yes.
And I got to admit where I get my information. The Retroist podcast, Silver Spoons episode 2 weeks ago. He points that out. Otherwise, I knew this guy. I knew I had seen him 100 times in the 80s, but most people would recognize him, from that. So props to the Retroist podcast. So after this, we get to the park it's the same place where the rowboats are. And they're kind of all hanging out now. Linderman's hanging out with Clifford and Joan Cusack's character and the booger guy and some other people. And then now we get the other bodyguard.
Well,
we got Moody.
Apparently Moody
up.
Got on the douchebag bully hotline and he called for backup from a like higher rated bully bodyguard kind of guy. So,
go ahead.
And this guy to me looked like genuinely 19, 20 years old.
Really? That's what I was going to ask. I was going to talk about the new bodyguard that Moody got, Mike. His name is Mike. Yeah. That's my bodyguard. I couldn't figure out Mike's age, man. It was kind of weird because he had a totally shaved head, which means, was he going bald or how old was this dude?
That was just a tough guy shaved head, but he was this guy was definitely like 20.
Okay. Yeah.
He was an older guy.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and he's totally trying to intimidate.
Oh yeah. He does. He intimidates
Linderman's character. This guy's not so tough. You're not so tough. You're not so tough. Yeah. Like he talked very softly, but he was a tough guy.
Come on, I want to, you know, let's shake. Come on, you know, and then he starts going, I heard you're a real killer. Heard you're a tough guy, huh? You beat up old, you know, beat up on kids or something like that. And he's trying to egg Linderman, and Linderman just will not have it. He just won't have it. He's not going to fight the guy. He doesn't want to fight.
Right. The only word that came to my mind was curd. I believe this was a word that my dad taught me. When he got a dog off of a Baltimore City tree, where the dog wrapped himself around the tree and almost killed himself. We got the dog home. My dad said the dog was curd. The dog was beaten so badly he would never fight back again for the rest of his life. That's what I thought when I saw Linderman on his knees where the bad guy had his hand in a tight handshake, and I thought, he's been curd. He's like not fighting back for nothing.
Right. Right.
And I was like shocked. Yeah. I was genuinely shocked because I thought Linderman would have at least pushed him, shoved him. He didn't do nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah, he just wanted to leave because he starts walking. He gets up, he walks away, and then, you know, of course, Moody is getting off on this big time, tells Mike to go kick his ass, you know, and he's like, all right. And this, you know, Steve, you and I talked about this a few weeks ago when we first started talking about doing this movie, how this part sucked. You feel so bad, man. You feel so bad for Linderman because he just wants to get out of there.
Plus, Linderman has just come out of his shell. Things are going good for the guy. Finally, for a long time. He really felt for the guy here.
Yeah, because, and like you said, he just came out of his shell. He's probably thinking to himself, you know, God, if I would have just...
stayed in my shell.
Stayed away from the... not gotten myself involved. Now I got this giant dude... you know, want Mr. Clean wanting to kick my butt.
Right.
You know, which he does. He ends up beating up Linderman. And of course, you know, Matt Dillon's character, Moody, comes in now. Now, after Mike kind of walks away, he's a tough guy. And, you know, you want me to kick your ass? You want me to kick your ass? I'm just thinking, dude, he just got his ass kicked. You know, and Mike obviously had to have stopped over off camera because Linderman still could have beat him at this point, I think. And then Moody throws, you know, gets this bright idea. He's going to, you know, put Linderman's motorcycle in pond.
Man, before that, it was another sad scene when Mike starts... well, Mike stops Linderman by just holding onto his handlebars in front of him while Linderman tries to get away on his bike or just drive away on his bike. And then he starts smashing the bike up.
He then punches him. Linderman falls over. The bike falls over. He starts kicking the motorcycle, knocks off the muffler, pulls the muffler off, uses that as a weapon, destroying other parts of the bike.
Oh, that was the worst.
Oh, man.
I don't know what I felt more bad in, when that scene or when Wreck-It Ralph was destroying the little girl's go-kart.
No, I didn't mind that at all. I felt bad for this because I like motorcycles, and this was, in my opinion, a beautiful classic bike. It was a Triumph, I believe. Maybe not. I don't care. It was good looking. I liked it. And he just literally ripped the back taillight off, ripped the muffler off, smashed the gauges, and I'm thinking, oh.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I could care less either way about a motorcycle, but just the fact that it wasn't just a motorcycle. It's what's been getting this guy through, obviously, the past year or whatever, working on this thing, rebuilding this thing, you know. So, yeah, when he's, you know, totally disrespecting this motorcycle on this guy, you do. It's almost like he'd probably rather get his butt kicked a little more than have his bike. At least he can walk away with a bike, you know. And then Moody gets the idea, and he throws his bike motorcycle in the pond, which, you know, Clifford tries to stop him, and even Linderman tries to, you know, that's when he kind of pops up. He tries to stop him. He can't.
Too late.
Yeah, it's too late. And so Linderman is just like, he's out of here. He's not sticking around. He starts running off.
And this was one of the few run scenes where you see him run off. You see him go around a corner. You see him go across the field. You see him go up a hill. You see him go across the bridge. I mean, you see him gone.
Yeah. And he's sprinting the whole time. Sprinting.
Yeah. And this was the last comment my wife made is, wow, he's really running fast.
Yeah.
And he was. He wasn't just jogging out. He really played that part. He just wanted to leave, get out of there. So, and Clifford, this is when I find, that wasn't his house, the workshop, because Clifford, you know, feels bad. He wants to go look for him. He's looking at the shop.
Plus, he has a mom that's worried about him. Yeah. That was interesting to me, too.
Yeah, because he goes to the house. I'm like, oh, wow, he doesn't live above the shop. He actually has a house.
Yes, but you could tell he lived in a lower income house because the train was literally right behind his house. You could hear and, I believe, see the train go right behind his house kind of thing, which just meant... unbelievable noise. Everything will be rumbling and vibrating. And he walked to the door, and I'm thinking, whose door is this? And it's like, is Linderman here? And it's like, what? I didn't know he had a house. I thought he lived in the garage. And yeah, the mom was genuinely concerned. Well, if you see him, please, please tell him I'm looking for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he ends up getting back home, Clifford, and Linderman's actually waiting there on his... balcony. He comes up the fire escape.
You got any money, kid?
Waiting there for
him. You got any money?
Yeah, he wants money because he wants to run away. He just feels like he's completely useless, can't do anything right, really feeling down on himself, and he just wants to split.
Well, see, right? I thought this was after school special time, and he was looking for money for crank or something, because this was the 70s.
No, I think he was looking to just get out of Dodge.
Clifford had what, $6?
Yeah.
Yeah, he had six. He's like, $6 is all I got. He takes it and starts to leave, and Clifford chases him down by the train.
It's funny. Like, Linderman walks, and Clifford has to run to keep up with him. That's how tall Linderman is.
And it literally took him like 4 blocks, seemingly, to catch up to Linderman.
Yeah, that is one thing I love about this movie. Linderman walks just through these streets like a shadow, man. He's like all over the place. Yeah.
Well, I think it's because he went down the fire escape so easily, and I think Clifford was like, oh, man, I don't want to go down that fire escape, like how I would be. So he probably went back in the hotel, had to grab the elevator, go down the elevator and out the front door, around back. That's how I look at it. I'm not going down a fire escape. Well,
Clifford went down the fire escape.
He did, but did he? But he did go slow initially down the ladder part.
Yeah, big time.
All right, well, I don't even remember that.
How many times you want?
I do remember.
Yeah, come on, shame on you, man.
Well, I just didn't pay attention to that. I don't know. You guys are all into the chase scenes and the distance and time
we're
between
into detail.
People and chases. And, but he catches up with them, and this is when Linderman actually tells. He breaks down. He breaks down and tells Clifford what really actually happened.
Well, he didn't just do it. Clifford was like egging him on, being like, dude, I understand about your brother. Could have happened to anyone. He said that to him so many times where Linderman's like, I killed him. And when he said it like that, oh, man.
But he's teared up. He just breaks down. He had to tell somebody at some point.
Right.
Because he's never told anybody what really happened.
Can I ask Dor, what your reaction was watching this for the first time when Linderman goes, it wasn't like, I didn't find him. I killed him. Like, at that point, when he said that to Clifford, did you think that it was murder or it was an accident?
I definitely didn't think it was murder initially. Okay. I just thought, that's why he screwed in the head.
Okay.
Yeah, I can remember as a kid even knowing, that it wasn't a murder.
Right.
It was an accident at his hands kind of thing. And even still, it really, the way he described it,
it
was an accident. They were the younger brother goofing and they're kind of struggling for the gun because he didn't want his brother to play with it, and it went off. But then he starts saying how, he didn't even know what happened. His brother didn't even know what happened. He had the blood coming out. He didn't even notice it. And that he tells his brother, you're going to have to take the blame for this or something.
Yeah.
And he's like, I couldn't even do that. Right. I couldn't tell anybody.
That was a great scene.
Yeah, it really was. Cause you get the truth of what happened, and he's never told anybody. So, he does feel a real friendship with this kid. Cause he even tells him, cause he still tells him it was an accident. It wasn't your fault. And he's like, look,
get away.
I don't know. He says, no, he doesn't. He says, I know you mean well. Something like that. Like, I know you mean well, Clifford, but
Go home.
Get away. Go home or something like that. That was definitely a touching scene.
Yeah. I like that scene. It was powerful. Especially when he just yells, I killed him. And I had to rewind that. I'm like, dude, that's hardcore.
But, yeah. Definitely feel bad for the guy, man. But the next day, you got Joan Cusack and the booger and Clifford walking to the park or wherever. Yeah, let's call it the park. Yeah. And, they spot Linderman and he's getting his bike out of the pond. They go over to him. But then again, who's there? Of course, at the park.
Of course, hey, you got my bike.
Yeah, Moody stops him. And,
oh, this is great.
He wants the bike or whatever. And, Linderman ain't budging. He's not saying nothing, not budging or nothing. And then he calls Mike over. And that's the weird thing. It's like, okay, this guy is clearly like 20 years old. Now he's hanging out with, because they got to all be around 14, 15
years
old.
I know, dude. I was thinking the same thing.
So I'm like, all right, why is he just hanging out at the park with him? And my wife's like, what the hell does he have around his neck? He obviously was working out with a towel wrapped around, twisted around his neck, stuffed into his shirt.
Yeah, that was really weird. I'm like, he looks like a Star Wars character or something.
Well, I thought he maybe just watched Rocky for like the fourth time.
I didn't know it was a towel. I didn't know what the hell it was. I'm like, is that a messed up turtleneck? But the best part about the scene was how Moody called Mike. When Moody knew he needed Mike, he goes, oh, Mike. Oh, you just wanted to strangle him at that point.
Yeah. And Mike comes over and, you know, tells Linderman basically, like, look, you can, what does he say? You got three seconds. Just to get out of here. And so he starts to walk with a bike and he's like, no, you're going to, the bike is Moody's now. It belongs to Moody. You're not taking the bike. And this is where Die Hard could have taken a note on a fight scene. What? This fight scene was beautiful.
Way too many shots for a real fight scene.
This fight scene was great. I thought so too. I love this fight scene.
There's always one huge disagreement we have with Dor, at least like one time per episode.
Don't get me wrong. It was more real than most fight scenes in most movies, but fights don't go like that.
They can.
Nah.
They
can. How many fights you been in?
Me? Yeah. Enough.
Because fights literally last like 30 seconds.
Maybe for you when you're on your back.
I'll give you on your back. It's because typically the first shot, because I mean, you punch a kid in the face most times, that kid isn't going to start just lay on the ground and cry.
Yeah, those kids aren't Linderman.
Oh, sorry. And Clifford, see,
plus he initiated it because he knew that at this point he had no choice.
Look, I'm not going to say the fight was real or not. I don't know, but I did like
the Linderman and Mike fight, because that was...
Well, we're not up to the Peachy fight yet, because that's ridiculous.
Yeah, that fight was much more concise.
Well, and this one, I'm just saying, compared to the last review he did with Die Hard,
that fight.
My feelings were strong about that fight scene. I hated that fight scene. It was so cheesy,
right.
Very cheesy. I thought this was more realistic. I mean, you're never going to get a real realistic fight in a movie unless it's a real
and
fight.
It's a real boring fight because it's over in 30 seconds. But I liked how Linderman was kind of holding his own, kind of hanging, and then Moody decided to jump in, and then Cliff was like, "I don't have a choice. I don't have a choice. I don't have a choice. I don't have a choice."
I know, but Cliff. Dude, it took Cliff a couple seconds. I don't know if I would have waited that long. Like, it was obviously this unfair double team going on. I'm like, Cliff, get your ass over there, man.
Well,
help him.
I kind of like that because it showed he was cross. He wasn't sure, which kind of reinforced he's a pussy. He isn't a fighter. He doesn't get in fights.
Right. That's true. I really liked the part.
It's not that he's a pussy. He's just an average kid. Mm-hmm. He's just an average kid in this going on. And Linderman is kicking Mike's butt. And, you know, so I don't think he was nervous, but also maybe didn't know if he even needed to jump in. I think he realized he needed to do something for whatever reason, but he did. I don't think it's because he's a puss. I think he's just a normal kid.
Well, I liked while they were fighting, Linderman's fighting Mike, and it's going back and forth. And Mike finally gets the upper hand, pushes Linderman up against a tree. Now, this part I found kind of interesting Linderman hits his head, bangs his head on the tree, feels that he's got blood coming out of his hair, out of his head, like his brother. Is this like a tie?
Psycho
back,
time.
Yeah. And I think once he saw that blood, I think it was, you know, I think they were trying to say, like, this is what happened to my brother. I'm going psycho on your butt now. And then that's when he just, like, dominates the fight after he gets the blood on his head. Do you guys think it was a tie? What do they call that? A tie back?
I can't Throwback, flashback, cutback.
Whatever. To his brother. Do you guys think it was like that?
I do.
Honestly, I didn't think that.
Oh, as soon as.
One way or the other, actually. You know.
As soon as I saw it, because it was literally a stop in action. It was bang, 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 tree, boom, hand, look up, go time. I took it as that.
Yeah, I kind of thought it might be, but it was cool. And that was, then Linderman finally got the best of Mike.
So Linderman takes care of Mike, big Mike. He's done.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely done after the whooping, because that was literally like 5, 6, 7, 8 shots back to back to back to back. I mean, Linderman would have not been able to, Mike would not have been able to talk correctly for like 24 hours.
Well, now we have a fight going. Now Clifford and Moody start fighting. And this one's a little more comedic, I guess, because Clifford doesn't know what he's doing. He's just swinging for the fences and missing.
And it appeared Moody didn't either.
Right. That was interesting too.
But that all comes down to, you know, strength in a group. Yeah. You know, he never probably really even needed to. It was just more of that intimidation, talking and acting that hard ass where he probably didn't have to do much because he always had his cronies there. So everyone would just kind of back off. But he, I mean, he still was, there was some fight there, punches exchanged. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I like the fact that Linderman, instead of stepping in, coaches him through it.
Yeah.
You know, coaches him through the fight, tells him to aim for the nose, which he eventually does. And this was the other part that's stuck in my head for years is he hits him in the nose and breaks his nose. And Moody's just sitting
you
there on the ground.
You broke my nose.
Yeah. I mean, I can remember hearing that from years ago.
Yeah, me too. And I love how he just said he was more in shock than in pain. He's just like, broke my nose, like matter of factly, you know.
Yeah, until the adrenaline is gone, and I'm sure he felt it quite well.
Yeah, broken nose doesn't hurt. He's definitely shocked.
So yeah, they're done, man. They get in their fight, and they start walking off, and it's kind of funny because then Linderman kind of jokes and, you know, propositions Clifford the same way he did earlier in the film about being his bodyguard and he'll do his homework and everything.
Kind of smart.
Yeah. It was good. I'm glad it ended that way and didn't like put an extra day of school in where now they're the, you know, everyone's like, I'm glad we didn't have that part because it very well could have.
It very well could have. You're right.
It could have been the next day and people are kind of giving Moody and his guys crap. Like I'm.
Was that common in 80s movies? Like once you hit the climax and it's over, literally 2 minutes after that, the movie ends.
It was a very dry ending. I don't know if it was common, but it was a definite dry. Oh, we're over, done.
Yeah, I mean, Cloak and Dagger is kind of that way. Dad, you know, his father walks out of the explosion. They hug him. Boom. That's the end.
That's it. Right. Like, you know, there's nothing else to say.
Yeah, and I liked it. I liked the ending of this movie. My wife didn't, but we had a disagreement.
What did
afterwards.
She want to see? Them go to school?
No, just overall. I was just like, man, I love this movie. It's a great movie. And she's just like, yeah, I can't believe this is one of your favorite movies or whatever. And she's like, over the years you've been talking about it. I'm like, it's a good movie. It's a good movie. But she's very anti-fighting and violence anyways.
Well,
so.
This is definitely not a politically correct movie for today because you're not supposed to beat the crap out of a bully. You know what I mean? So kids these days almost would be encouraged to not watch it because you're not supposed to fight back. You're supposed to go tell a teacher and get help, you know, where back then it was okay to show the bully getting his comeuppance, if that's the right word.
Yeah.
And then what it reminded me of, there's that YouTube video. Sorry, man. There's that YouTube video going around or has gone around about the... Where that scene where there's a little scrawny kid, it kind of reminds you of Moody. He's a little kid, but you could tell he's a bully because he's got friends and he's got a little group.
Australia.
And he's it was in Australia. He's punching this like bigger, he's actually a bigger kid, plump kid, in the face. He like punched him in the face twice or something. And the big kid just had enough, takes him, picks him up, kind of turns him upside down and throws him, just like body slams him onto the concrete.
Like a rag doll.
And on the side of a little place, like a planter, like a little concrete planter. Probably almost broke the kid's leg and just like then walked away. And like you could tell that kid would have no more problems now with that, with that other guy. Yeah. So that's what it reminded me of, the Clifford Moody fight. Did you see that video, Sean?
No, I didn't.
Oh, man.
I gotta dig that up. It's classic.
It is, because you could feel for the fat kid, the big tall kid, because he was like, I don't want to fight. No, stop. I don't want to fight. No, stop. I don't want to fight. Okay, I'll fight.
And then this is a
real
video.
Picks him up like a rag doll, nearly over his head, and slams him down like a puppet. And the little kid bounces around and tries to hop up like nothing hurts, but like
he's limping away.
Yeah, and then like half a second later, he's like, "Oh no, it really does hurt."
Yeah. Well, he did drop him partially on his head, right? Like directly on his head. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'll have to check that one out. I've not seen that one.
It's like a 10-second YouTube video.
So I got a question for the two of you. We had a discrepancy. Well, it was a few episodes ago, but it didn't get aired. our original Cloak and Dagger episode, and we had an argument, not an argument, but a discussion on acting. So, Dor, what did you think about the acting?
Are you sure to come to me first?
Yeah, yeah. As far as the main actors, you know, Matt Dillon.
Honestly, Cliff, to me, I don't know. I honestly have a hard time saying if he was good or not. I'll just say I didn't like him. I'm not going to say he was good or bad. I'll just say I didn't really like him. I don't like
his character or his acting.
His acting. Matt Damon, right? Dillon. I was getting it wrong. Matt Dillon. I don't like him as an actor, but he did a good job. I will absolutely say that he absolutely did. And Linderman, I think, did a great job because I believed him. He's the guy I believed the whole time. He could have been a psycho. He could have just been hurt. He could have been. And then when, you know, he was genuinely happy, he was genuinely happy. When he was fearful for his life, he ran like an NFL star. You know what I mean? He pulled out all the punches. He obviously went into that movie saying, I have to do this right.
I think this was his first movie.
I believe it because it did say introducing.
Opening.
Yeah, it did say introducing. Good call.
Yeah, but it was just Cliffy, and I think I have seen him in a couple of other things, and he just never rubbed me the right way. Maybe it's just me.
I'm with Dor. I got to agree. Cliffy was okay in parts, and other parts were okay. Nothing real special. And he was like the main character. The other guys, I think, did a good job.
Especially the booger kid. He looked the part, played the part, sounded the part. Did the...
I don't think he was a good actor.
Oh, and that kid. And that's what I mean. He wasn't supposed to be.
Yeah, I think he definitely, he played just an average kid fine. And I looked up IMDb. I don't think he was in anything else.
I don't think he was.
I could be wrong. I couldn't pinpoint him by his character name. I'm guessing it was...
That was right.
Who I said
you said
earlier,
that right.
But,
Paul Colantel Carson.
I liked Clifford. I thought the part was played well, by Chris Makepeace. He was in Meatballs. But I liked him, like his dorkiness when he's like, "Hey, you know, those will stunt your growth." When Linderman's going to take a, I don't know what Dor's doing in the hangout here.
Looking at your hair, obviously you like him.
Oh, when he's going to have a smoke, and he's like, "Hey, those things will stunt your growth." Then he kind of does like a little dorky dance, like, "Oh, I just made a joke." I don't know. I thought he played the part well. Matt Dillon, had no problems with him. I thought he played his part well. Even Adam Baldwin as Linderman, he kind of plays the same part like in Chuck. He's that quiet, tough, keeps to himself. He plays that part well. But I thought he played this well. But I mainly wanted to ask because we did, which nobody heard because we redid the episode, we did have a big discussion on the acting of in Cloak and Dagger. The part of Davey.
Yeah. I mean, this kid might have been a good actor. I just didn't feel it. I did not feel it at all. Nothing he did to me seemed really too genuine or authentic. He just seemed like he was just doing what someone told him to do.
Yeah. Well, but I don't know. It all seemed like just average people to me. The look, the feel.
They had that nailed.
I enjoyed it.
They had that nailed.
Yeah, that was just very average movie, like average feel. Normal, very normal, like.
So, Dor, also, so this was your first viewing of it. I think when I first said this movie, you didn't seem too enthused about doing it.
I never heard of it before. When you mentioned it, I never heard. Because I honestly, I'm stupid, okay? My memory's shot. I, for some reason, kept getting this mentally confused with the horrible Whitney Houston movie.
Oh, my body.
I'm thinking, what? What? He wants to do what?
But now seeing it, did you like it?
Permission to be frank, sir? Horrible. Yeah. It was a horrible after-school special turned into a movie. The only thing that made it not an after-school special was him saying, son of a bitch. And to me, it was... The pace was very slow, after-school special-like. The music was very non-unique, very school after-special-like. It was supposed to be a feel-good movie to me. Very, you know, to me that it had all of the makings of what someone who wanted to do an after-school special wanted, but they couldn't do this on an after-school special. They just flat out couldn't. You know what I mean? Because you can't have a kid beating up another kid,
right? Oh, that's, hey, fair enough, man. Like we've said this before. We don't all have to love these movies, or any of us for that matter.
Okay, I'll say this. I genuinely do not like this movie. I will genuinely never go out of my way to watch this movie again. I'm almost going to encourage my kid to watch this movie. Because yeah. I think it does have a couple, dare I say, good messages. You don't judge the book by the cover. You don't believe what all the other kids say about this one kid. You know what I mean? You have to once in a while stand up for yourself. I'm definitely encouraging my kids. You're not going to be a bully. You're not going to get in fights all the time. But once in a while, you are going to have to defend yourself. I don't mean attack. Yeah. I mean defend yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of try to give my older son right now, not so much the younger two, but my, you know, he just turned 11, and he's dealt with not situations as drastic as this, but he's dealt with kids giving him a hard time about things, you know, and we've raised him that way. Like, look, and I've told him, like, and I, you know, like I said, my wife is very anti-violent. And so am I with my kid. I don't want him getting in fights. I used to as a kid all the time. I don't want him getting mixed up.
Same here. My son is going to be 8 this year. When he was 6 in kindergarten, in daycare, a kid 3 years older than him did not like my son. My son was very, very, very tall for his age. The kid in daycare, in hot spots, kindergarten type daycare, picked up a piece of wood, slammed it on my oldest son's head. There were 3 puddles bigger than a foot around of blood on the floor in the daycare by the time I went in, because he just turned off, hauled, and nailed my son. And my son is very pacifist by his nature, by his very nature. He's very pacifist. And he just, when I walked in, he just kept saying to me, "I don't know why he did that to me, Dad. I don't know why he did that to me, Dad." I just took him to the hospital. When he wasn't looking, I cried because it really hurt my feelings. Because this kid I knew bullied him. And I knew from other parents in that daycare, the kid who did it is a bad seed. Nobody likes that kid. He is genuinely mean to people. Needless to say, he didn't get reprimanded, but less than 2 or 3 months later, the kid was out of that daycare, so I felt better. But, you know...
He doesn't get reprimanded for putting another kid in the hospital?
No.
Why not?
Because they said we shouldn't have taken him to the hospital. He was fine. Even though when we got to the hospital, they cut a part of his hair and they put the super glue on his head to seal the wound. They don't reprimand people, apparently, unless they break a leg or something, you know. And this is not school. This is daycare. This is a political thing. This isn't school. And I mean, and to one degree, I wanted my kid to fight back. But at another part, I almost want my son to know how it feels to be bullied so he doesn't do it, because he's gigantic for his age. I was at a time genuinely scared he would be the bully. Genuinely scared.
Well, you know, as long as you're guiding him the right way.
Well, I know.
You know, I think that happens sometimes, though, with kids that they're not. And
well, the bad thing is, I mean, honestly, there's 24 hours in a day. 8 of those hours, he is asleep. At least 8 hours of sleep. That leaves 16 hours. At least 10 hours of the day, he's either in school or in daycare. And it's typically closer to 12 hours. That's a lot of influence other people can have over him.
Yeah.
And that's what I can't control. I can't control what people do to him. I can't control how he acts and reacts around them. So when I have my time with him, I just try to talk to him straight about stuff.
That's not that this is the parenting podcast, but yeah, I mean, it's all you can do. Yeah. You just got to try and teach him, you know, what's right and how to treat people. You know, that's our biggest thing is make sure you try to treat people how you want to be treated. Yeah. I mean,
and I'll say when this movie was released, it probably was needed. It probably was needed because I know when I was young, I was beyond bullied by a kid, I guess like Linderman. He was like a foot and a half taller than anyone else in the school. He definitely failed at least 3 or 4 times. And he tried to take money from more than a couple kids, you know, not cool.
Well,
Steve,
what?
Your feelings.
My feelings about...
Steve has taught his cats to fight back. Steve has taught his cats well.
Well, I don't think this movie was horrible, like Dor said. Dor, do you really mean that horrible? You think this movie was horrible? If you had to rate it 1 to 10, you'd rate it like 2 or 3?
I'm a pit and pendulum kind of person. Not much lands in the middle.
Okay. Well, I don't think it was horrible, but... And you know what? Honestly, I've never watched an after-school special ever in my life. I watched the Transformers or G.I. Joe when I got home. So I don't know what channel after-school specials were on, but I didn't watch them. So I didn't even know that this was like one. If I watched, it's really tough because I've watched it so many times growing up. As a kid, I can't rate this movie. I can't put myself in Dor's shoes and watch it with like a new set of eyes.
Oh, but, yeah, you totally can't.
But if I had to, and if I had to try to do that, I would think that this movie, if I watched it nowadays for the first time, was okay. I think it would just be okay. It would not be great. It wouldn't be something I would go run out and try to rent or watch again a billion times. I would think it's an okay movie. Pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll watch it again if it's on or, you know, if it were on something, I would watch it again.
Well, if you didn't grow up with this movie, what would you think about it?
I don't know, because like you said, it's hard to make that judgment because I did. You know, and I did not watch this movie like I watched Cloak and Dagger. It wasn't something I watched all the time or I watched, you know, 3 times a week during one summer. It wasn't like that. It was an HBO movie. But I remembered it. You know, it stood out. And I enjoyed it again the 2 times I just watched in the past few weeks for this show. And, you know, I totally enjoyed it. And I mean, I think it stands up for what it was.
It was
pretty good.
It was pretty good.
Anything else you guys got about this movie you want to add, or I'm going to call this one?
I will just say that you were right. I believe you were right. I was right. This is supposed to be set in Chicago.
You were right.
Oh, I was right. Okay. And I will say in the Wikipedia article for this page, they have what looks to be a genuine poster for this movie, which I got to say, I think I like this poster. I would like to have this, you know, on my wall kind of thing. Cause you know, it has Adam Baldwin. What's her name? I can't remember now.
Joan Cusack.
Joan Cusack
and Matt Damon.
Matt, whatever his name is. Dylan laying down. Cause it's like supposed to be like right after the fight.
Ah, cool.
Yeah.
I got to check that out.
I put it in the chat.
And Ben Affleck
is
standing
there. And
Ben Affleck
is, and I think I see Bruce Willis as the principal in the back.
Oh, man. I think this
I do have one.
Well, yeah, go ahead.
I have one thing to say. Well, before we did the show, I was talking to you guys on Voxer, and I told you I was upset about something. Remember that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I'm upset about was that there was no...
My Bodyguard 2?
No. Oh. There was no foreign accents in this movie that Dor could butcher like he did in Dialogue.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, true. They were all very American.
It was.
And they had opportunities.
That was why I was
upset.
You know
what I mean? The doorman or the guy picking him up in the car could have been, you know, something.
Could have been. But they blew it.
Completely blew it. And honestly, I say, the one scene in this movie I really genuinely liked a lot, Martin Mull standing at the front desk right before he gets called away for Mr. Dobbs and his mom. He has a airline stewardess, and he's trying his best to put the moves on her.
Oh, I don't think he's trying to. I think he did. I think they were implying to me that
that's
he
what
did.
I liked. I liked that because I like Martin. I just like him. I just really genuinely like him a lot. So any scene that focused on him, I was all over.
Yeah, I think just after that or something that you also see Norm.
George Wendt.
Cheers.
Yeah.
Pop in.
Yeah, he was
briefly,
the air conditioner guy. You want me to work overnight? You want me to work overnight? Yeah. What? Yeah.
Yeah, so this is a great movie. I still like it. I'm going to chalk it up as big thumbs up for me. I am waiting, though, to do a movie that I loved as a kid and watch it now and go, wow, this sucked. But
Knight Rider, you know, watching Knight Rider.
Well, we're doing
movies.
I
didn't even know that was a movie.
I'm just saying, that's the kind of thing as a kid I remember I loved. I tried to watch it again. Oh, it was so painful.
The show is so horrible.
Everything about it's horrible.
Oh, I got to watch that because I loved that as a kid too.
That and Airwolf. I loved Airwolf and I can't watch it.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, for me, a lot of times too, these shows, you know, I like to watch a lot of the old shows. A lot of times I'm doing other things. So they're more of just kind of like the background noise. And I watch a little bit, then I'm doing whatever, and I'm watching a little bit, you know. But then sometimes I do watch Fletcher Friday. I mean, I'm literally legitimately watching Murder, She Wrote at work. I'm eating lunch, watching it. So, but, I don't know. I'd say this, My Bodyguard is a wrap. I don't think I have nothing else to say. So, but yeah,
I am with you.
Another good episode, guys. I want to give a plug out to Rob O'Hara, also known as Flack, over in the Retroist blog. He does a lot of blogging there and in the forums. And also at his site, RobO'Hara.com, Flack's given us some definite props on his podcast. And for that, I thank him. I definitely thank him. He made it known on his last episode, Ninjas, on a You Don't Know Flack podcast, which you can go to podcast.RobO'Hara.com.
That's a good name. That's a good name.
He had made it known that if we are to do Revenge of the Ninja, he definitely wants to join us on that. And I told him he will. If we do it, or when we do it, we will do it. He will be here with us. So, anybody that likes old computer stuff, or, it's him by himself on his podcast telling stories, memories and stuff. But yeah, old computer, stuff in arcades. This guy's a genius with arcade games. I think he had up to like 30 at one point in his barn out back. So definitely go to RobO'Hara.com, check out his site, and like I said, podcast.RobO'Hara.com, check out his podcast, You Don't Know Flack. It's good stuff. Also, if you have any movie suggestions for us you want us to do, you can email us at showideas@throwbackreviews.com. You can follow us at Throwback Review. That's our Twitter. And we'll be, I usually announce what the next show is going to be or when it's going to be out or stuff like that. So, and I believe our next episode is going to be The Last Starfighter. So that will be next week. Dor, where can people find you at?
The easiest way is just go to podnuts.com. But I highly encourage people, try to get on iTunes and try to give Throwback Reviews a positive feedback if you like it at all. If you don't like it at all, email us. Let us know what you think we're not doing good. Are we doing the wrong types of movies? Is Door-to-Door Geek talking too much? Or, you know, whatever. Just let us know. Feedback is vital, and positive feedback is genuinely appreciated.
And they should email you directly, or...?
Oh, you're breaking up there, yeah. Steve.
Throwbackreviews@gmail.com.
You can either do throwbackreviews@gmail.com or showideas@throwbackreviews.com. Either one, doesn't matter. I probably should pick. Well, Steve, you there? No, we lose you. I think we lost him.
Can you hear me?
You can find him at. Oh, yeah, go ahead. I was just going to plug you for you, but yeah, if you're back.
Thanks. Check me out at tone40.com, T-O-N-E-40.com. That's it?
Yes. All right. And for me, you can go to Throwback Review or at Throwback Review on Twitter, or you can go to sjdiner.com. That's my blog, which I have not updated in a little bit, but it has my Google Plus and my own personal Twitter there. So, so another great episode down the hatch, boys. It was a good time. And until next time, thanks for listening.
Not the worst. It's the boogers that freak me out. You get hepatitis from the fresh ones.